So I think I'm a pretty good driver, but I wasn't when I was 16. I remember getting my first ticket. We lived in a little town called Bells, Texas. No one? Okay. Bells, Texas, and it's a town of like 600 people, and I'd just gotten my license. I'd had it for maybe a couple of months, and there's one stoplight. You go through the stoplight, and then you go a little ways, and there's a turn that you have to make. And so I get pulled over just a couple months after getting my license, and I get a ticket, and the police officer says to me, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" And of course, I'm like, "No, I was doing everything correct. I'm a great driver." He said, "You took that turn too fast." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, didn't you see the sign back there that said turn?" I said, "No, I've driven by this many times and have never seen that sign." But sure enough, there was a sign there. And signs exist to show you something that you might not know. That's why signs exist. Think about it for a moment. We have exit signs in here and at all our locations. We have exit signs. And you may know there's an exit there, but you may not. So there's a sign there. So signs exist to show us something that we might not already know. And the book of John, we're in a series called Prove It. And it's this guy named John who wrote about some specific events that Jesus did. And I want to start by looking at John chapter 20. It says this: "Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name." It's almost like John is gathering these signs that Jesus did and presenting some evidence to us. It's like he's finished his story, he closes the book, he hands it to us and says, "Okay, there's the evidence. I'm proving it to you." So that's what John does. And in this series, for the next few weeks, we're gonna look at each of the miracles that Jesus does in the book of John and that John lays out for us. And in this case study, then we will have to do something with this information. You could get to the end of your life, I could get to the end of my life, having ignored the signs. Like, but that doesn't get us a pass with God. I still got the ticket just because I didn't see the sign. And John's saying, here's the signs, now do something with that information. So let's go to the first sign that John records for us. Now, what we're gonna look at is the first miracle that Jesus ever does. It's a significant miracle, but in my mind, it's not a very epic miracle. He's not healing anyone. He's not raising anyone from the dead. He's not growing a limb back from someone. He's not doing those things. It's not a very epic miracle. His first miracle is to keep a party going. Now, I don't know what you came in here thinking about Jesus, but Jesus isn't boring. Like, his first miracle, very purposeful, was to keep a party, a wedding, a celebration going. It's where he turns the water into wine. So we're gonna read a few verses, and we really need to read these and go through them so that you can understand where we're going with this. So let's read the story of his first miracle. "On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, 'They have no more wine.' 'Woman,'" now, I wouldn't recommend talking to your mom this way or your wife. But seriously though, this was not a like derogatory statement back then. It actually meant something better than that. But he says, "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. There is the story of Jesus turning water into wine, his first miracle. I am in the middle of a 14-year argument right now with someone. I don't know what the longest argument you've ever had with someone is, but mine is going on 14 plus years. And the problem is that I'm married to this person. So I don't foresee an end to this. Like, I guess when one of us is no longer here, that person wins. I don't know how this is gonna end. But I think I have all the evidence to support my case, and I think you'll agree with me. Since she doesn't get up here to share her point, then you get to agree with me, I guess, is what's gonna happen. I seriously think it's an argument, though, that'll happen till the end of time. And here's the single thing, there's more probably, but this is the one thing we cannot agree on, the one thing. The car should never get below a quarter of a tank of gas, ever. I'm standing firm in that, like I believe it. Because when we switch cars and I get in the car she just drove, no matter which car it is, inevitably, I get in it, she just drove it, and the gas light's on. I literally think, like, at this point, she's doing it on purpose because she knows it bugs me. But this is something I will stand my ground on. But it might have to do with another fear that I have, and I'm very serious about this. You've heard of FOMO before, the fear of missing out. Like, you don't want to miss out on something, so you have FOMO. I have a fear called FORO, the fear of running out. Like, not just gas. Like, I'm serious. I have dreams, very vivid dreams sometimes, where I'm trying to get somewhere and I'm running out of time and I can't make it. You may have dreams like that too. Like, you have all these responsibilities, but things keep stopping you from getting to where you're wanting to go. And so you're running out of time, or you're running out of resources, or you're running out of supplies, and you just can't get to where you need to be. This is what's happening in this story. They've ran out of wine. And to completely understand this, we have to understand the context back then, the culture. Weddings back then were not like our weddings. Weddings back then lasted a whole week, 7 days. My wedding was a couple hours. Back then, it was a celebration. It was a party for an entire week. Jesus shows up to the wedding on the third day. So there were still 4 days of celebration, of party, of this stuff happening, 4 more days of this. And weddings were something that you saved your entire life for. The responsibility to pay for the wedding back then was on the groom. So the groom would work hard and not get married, not throw a party, not throw a celebration for his wedding until he could pay for all this. So it was a big deal. Jesus' mother was somehow involved in this wedding. We don't know exactly how, but she was involved in the planning of this somehow. And then she realizes there's no more wine. They're empty. And I want you to understand how tragic this is. Like, it's a little bit shameful to run out of gas, but it's very shameful to run out of wine at a wedding back then. I mean, you're showing some things by doing this. You're showing that you might not be able to provide, that you don't have enough resources. You couldn't even provide wine at your wedding. Like, that's a huge deal. Very, very shameful. And I want to ask you a question. At all our campuses, Springboro, Northmont, Classics, if you're watching online, answer this question. This is a big question for all of us to ask. What are you running out of? What are you running out of? Because I really believe that everybody in here, we're running out of something. We're running out of something. So answer this question. Think about this for a moment. I believe everyone in here is running out of something, and some of you may have already run out, and you came in here feeling empty, like, God, if you don't do something, I don't know what's gonna happen next. Like, God, I really need you to come through for me. Maybe you're on the verge of walking away from all this. Your relationships are at risk. Your everything that's your job, everything you're dealing with, it's at risk now because you are running out. And maybe you've been on empty for a very long time. Maybe it's ideas. Like, you're running out of ideas to save your marriage. Like, you've tried everything you can think of. You've seen people, you've talked to people, you've gotten advice, you've researched things, you've read books, you've gone to conferences about it, and you're running out of ideas how to make it better. Maybe it's a relationship with your kids or roommate. Whatever it is, you're running out of ideas to fix it or to fix yourself. Maybe it's joy. And maybe it's been so long since you've experienced happiness. You remember what it was like because you had it at some point. But now you feel empty. You don't remember the last time you really smiled or felt happy. Now you feel cold and dissatisfied by everything. Maybe it's patience. Maybe everything seems to get you on edge now. That teacher or that friend, the way that person chews, the kids being too loud, the way she or he snores. Like, these things never used to bother you, but for some reason now you're running out of patience. Your parents telling you what to do, you're tired of it, or tired of being single, something like that. And you're running out of patience. Maybe you're running out of strength. You always seemed so strong, and now here you are feeling weak. Like, people always came to you for advice when they were weak, but they don't know that if one more person comes to you, you don't know what's gonna happen because you're empty now and you need a refill. So what are you running out of? Here's what I find so crazy about this story. Jesus let it run out. Think about that. He knew it was gonna run out. He's Jesus. Like, he shows up to the wedding, it runs out. It's not a surprise to him. He knew, he's Jesus. In fact, the previous chapter tells us that he was the Word from the beginning. So he knew it ran out. I promise he knew. And he was okay with it. And I think what I'm learning here is that Jesus is going to let some things run out. He's gonna let some things run out. I wanna share a journey with you that my wife and I went on a few years ago, and we went down a trip memory lane this past week kind of talking about this, and we even went to some social media posts that we made during this time, and I brought those with me and wanna show you some pictures and some social media posts that we made during this journey. The whole journey starts actually at a wedding in Jamaica. Now, when a story starts with a wedding at Jamaica, you think it's gonna be pretty epic, but don't get too excited. It's a great start to a story, but this was us at a vow renewal we did at our 7-year anniversary. We went to Jamaica with some of our really good friends, and we did a vow renewal there. And so we were in Jamaica, an incredible experience. We fly back, and the next day, I wake up from bed. My wife is already up. She loves to garage sale, which I love about her. Saves us a lot of money, like money that could go in the car for gas, but it doesn't for some reason. And back to that, more evidence to support my case. I'm not bitter at all, I promise. More evidence to support my case. I've never ran out of gas, and she has. So, and I've had to rescue her, so I think my case is better here. Anyways, I'm not bitter, I promise. So we get back from Jamaica. I wake up the next day, she's out garage selling, and when I wake up, my leg is swelled up and it's hurting. I don't know why, and it starts just to hurt more and more and swell up more and more. So I call my wife and she comes back and we decide to go to the ER of the town we lived in there. And within 15 minutes, they're care flighting me to Dallas and loading me on the helicopter. They diagnosed me with a blood clot and a very serious blood clot, which all of them are very serious, but this just felt very, very serious. In fact, the doctor knew I was a pastor and asked to pray with my wife to prepare her for how serious of a deal this is as she has to deal with what's about to happen. And so the first post that my wife made right as this is happening is, please pray for Nathan. He is being care flighted to Dallas for a blood clot in his leg, and pray for me too. Probably because she was about to run out of gas and had to stop, but I'm not bitter, I promise. So she posts this. I get there to the hospital. It's about a 20-minute helicopter flight. I get there, and they immediately just rush me into procedures. I'm in and out of it. They're sedating me. And here's the update from my wife. We just found out that Nathan has another clot in his vena cava, a place where two leg arteries come together in abdomen. They have him on the strongest meds they can to try to break up the clots. He'll be going back into surgery this afternoon to try the same procedure as last night. I know that God is bigger than all this, and we know he answers prayers, so please keep praying. We are so ready for some good news. The news was bad. Here's what the news was. At this point, if they could not bust the clot within the next several hours, the news she had heard, I didn't know this yet, was that at best, I would lose my leg. At worst, the clot would go up to my lungs and heart, and I would die. So I wake up from a procedure and back in the room, and I can tell something's wrong. I can tell my wife is trying to be so strong as she's telling me what's happening, and as doctors are talking to me. I knew something was wrong. So she goes on, update on Nathan. Procedure didn't go as well as we had hoped for. The doctor was unable to break up the clot. We will know more when we talk to the doctors this afternoon. Thanks so much for your continued prayers. So it was tough. It was not easy. Latest update, the final one of that night. She says, we will not go into all the details, but today was a very hard day. The news was not what we're expecting, but God does not have to work the way we expect him to. Trusting, praying, hoping, relying. Thanks again for the prayers, the calls, the text messages, and the visits. They mean more to us than you guys could ever know. So as they do a procedure on me and they keep trying to bust up the clot, they're not able to get it. And one thing, if you're in the medical field, you may know this. They'll try to put like a filter in you to catch the clot if it comes up, and they'll go through your collarbone to do that. And one thing they kept running into is they couldn't get past my stomach abdomen area to get that filter in. And the news they had told my wife and family and friends was that I was just completely clotted, and at any point they're gonna one of the clots is gonna break off and go to my heart and lungs. This is the news they're dealing with. Come to find out, they take me to one more scan and they find out that I'm not all clotted. In fact, I was born without my inferior vena cava. And that may sound crazy, I mean, probably means nothing to a lot of you, but if you're in the medical field, you know that's a big deal. I was born without that. And what that does is take the blood from your legs to your heart and back and stuff. It's very important to have. I was born without it, and somehow my body has created collateral veins to get its own path there. And so I wasn't all clotted. So it was very good news whenever they shared that with my wife. Very good news to find that out. So I guess I'm, next post she says, update, had the same procedure today, not much change. But he did watch an amazing T.D. Jakes message. A little shout out to the bishop, I guess. Hoping for some answers, for some more answers tomorrow. And I'm trying to get some brownie points, so I make a post. There is without a doubt no one else I'd want beside me on this unexpected journey. But you need to know that we were low. Like, we were hurting. We didn't expect this. This was a surprise. A couple days later, great update. He is out of ICU. Praise the Lord. Last update. Praise God. Nathan is home. That put us on a journey that we never, ever expected to be on. But here's what I know. Jesus knew. Jesus knew. Like, this didn't surprise him. He knew. And when we were running out, when we were out of strength, when we were low, I discovered that when I hit rock bottom, he was the rock at the bottom. Like, I had to go through that to learn this. I'm not sure I would have discovered that had he not let me run out of strength, of hope, of joy. And I believe I'm speaking to some people who feel like you're running out or you've already run out. But you need to know that it's in the running out that can cause you to run to Jesus. It's in the running out that we run to Jesus. Because I love what Mary does next. When she finds out the wine is gone, when it ran out, here's what she does. John chapter 2, verse 3. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." Mary goes to Jesus. It's her first instinct. It's what she does. She goes to Jesus. She told him what he already knew. And catch this. She wasn't doing it to inform him. She was doing it to involve him. There's a big difference. Like, he knew. Jesus already knew. Mary didn't know what to do, but she knew who to go to. And maybe the reason you keep running out of things, or I keep running out of things like strength and joy and patience and ideas and wisdom, is because you're running to people who don't have what you need. It's not gonna be in another relationship. It's not gonna be hooking up with another person. They're not gonna give you what you need. Maybe Jesus is letting you run out so that you will run to him. So there are three really important things that I wanna look at quickly in this passage. Three quick things. Now, before I get to those, there's a lot of context that I could go into in this whole story that we read. There's a lot of great biblical narrative that has great future signs and things like that. Things like Jesus showed up on the third day. That's a huge sign. Like, that's not, it's easy to connect dots to what that means. I could talk about the ceremonial washing of hands that happened in the stone jars. That's huge. There's a lot there that we could look at. I could look at how much wine Jesus made. It would be enough to fill 1,000 bottles in our day and time. I could talk about how what that shows is that God is a God of enough. He always has enough for us. We could talk about that. We could talk about how great the wine was, how it was the best wine they've ever had. We could talk about the significance of this miracle happening at a wedding. I mean, if you read scripture, if you know much about God, it's almost like he's infatuated with weddings. The Bible starts with a wedding. It ends with a wedding. There's weddings in between. So we could talk about that, that his first miracle happened at a wedding. These all, they have a great tie-in to the greater story of God. But what I want to talk about just for the next few minutes is, what does this have to do with us today? And I want to show you a couple things that God showed me. The first one is this. Your refill, you're empty and you need to refill, your refill is nearby. It's nearby. Look at what happens. In John chapter 2, verse 6, it says, nearby stood six stone water jars. It's, your refill is nearby. It was something close to them. You see, when something is close to us, we tend to see it as common. There are people who will fly from all over the world to come to Dayton, Ohio, to visit our Air Force Museum. It's great. I love the Air Force Museum. But we kind of treat it as common if you live here, don't you? Like, we love it. The Wright brothers here, like, we have all airplanes and stuff here. It's amazing. But we kind of treat it as common. People come from all over the world to see this stuff. But we treat it as common often because it's close by. So he points to the six nearby stone water jars. In fact, everyone who came to the wedding had to walk right by them and even stop at them, put their hands in it, cleanse themselves, and then walk in. Everybody. So it was nearby. Everybody had to walk by it. And I believe what you need for your refill is nearby. It's the Bible sitting on your shelf that you haven't read in months. It's the notification, the Bible notification that you get on your phone every morning that you just don't have time for, so you swipe it away. I believe the refill you need is nearby. I mean, it's the church that you drive by every day to work, and on Easter you stopped, and now you're back this week because there was something you liked about it, and I believe your refill might be happening. It's a spouse who keeps telling you something, but you refuse to hear it. It's a friend who told you to call them if you ever need anything, and your pride just won't let you pick up that phone. I'm telling you, we look for all these incredible miracles to happen, but we're walking right by them every day. It's like driving past a gas station, but complaining you don't have any gas. I'm not bitter, I promise. But it's nearby. It's nearby. The second thing I want to look at is, yes, it was nearby, but your refill is also normal. It's normal. Look what happens. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water, so they filled them to the brim. Your refill is normal. They needed wine, but Jesus points to water. Water, the most normal thing in the world. Yeah, we take it for granted, and if we don't have it, we want it. But most of the time, water is just very, very normal thing for us. He doesn't point to what they need. He points to what they have. And maybe you're looking for this huge aha moment with God for you just to wake up one day and problems are fixed. But I believe your miracle might look pretty normal. Start new habits. Discipline yourself. Maybe it'll come from finding joy in the normal things around you. I wonder what you're walking right by because it looks normal and you're used to it. But maybe your refill will come through the normalcy of setting some boundaries in your life. Maybe it's the normalcy of changing what you watch and what you let speak into you. Maybe it's the normalcy of setting good habits, of going to bed sooner, waking up earlier. Maybe it's the normal things that you're walking right by each day where you can find the refill. Man, we'll say, God, use me. Or you say, God, please use me. I want to be used by you. Well, go home and be a good dad. Go be an encourager. Go encourage people around you. Go be a good friend. And in the normalcy, you'll begin to see this refill happening in your life. And then lastly, your refill, I believe, is now. It's now. Look at what happens. Then he told them, now, draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so. He says, now. He didn't explain it. They didn't know. He just said, now. And too often, we live in a someday mentality. Like, someday I'm going to change my habits. Someday I'll work on my marriage. Someday I'll forgive that person. Someday I'll do better. But But I believe your refill can start right now. And maybe God is challenging you to start now. I mean, it could be so many things. It could be your relationship with Jesus. You've been walking by him for years, and people have been praying for you, and people have invited you to church, and you know that Jesus has been doing some things in your life, but you've been ignoring them. But maybe today Jesus is saying now. Like, now's the time. Maybe you've been putting some things off in your life. You're hearing him say, now, it's time today. I find it crazy that in this story, we never know who the bride and groom are. Now, if we're telling a story about a marriage, we typically are going to start with who the marriage is about, right? We never find that out. In fact, it's in a place called Cana, which we aren't even 100% sure where Cana is located. There's some ideas, but we don't know. But those things didn't matter to John as he's laying out his case to us, as he's giving us these signs. I believe the sign that he is pointing us to today is this. You can have something better. Jesus lets the wine run out and replaces it with something even better. You may have walked in here today feeling like you're empty and you've run out. Maybe even you're mad at Jesus for letting some things happen in your life. Like, how could he? God, how could you put me in this situation? But he didn't let you run out because he left you. He let you run out so that he could give you something better. That's what he did at the wedding at Cana. I want to show you a picture and update you a little bit. This is another story. This is at a Texas Rangers game in Arlington. I actually took this picture. Some of the best seats I'd ever had. We're sitting at the front row right at third base, and that's Adrian Beltre, who's a great baseball player, just retired. I took this picture. I'm sitting there, and then my wife asked me to go get her some ice cream, so I walk up and go get her some ice cream, and I never return. And after maybe half an inning or so, someone comes and sits next to where my wife is and says, did you have somebody sitting here with you? She says, yes, my husband. And he says, well, you need to come with me because there's been an accident. So she follows him up and takes me over to, I guess, where the ice cream I was getting at, and I'm laying in a pool of blood, passed out. And they had gotten the ticket out of my pocket to see where I was sitting, to see if anyone was with me. And I had apparently had a seizure or a stroke. We still don't know what it was. So I wake up in the hospital. That's all I remember. I remember waking up in the middle of the night at the hospital. One of my first questions was, who won the game? Because that was important to me. And then she tells me, you have to ask her sometimes. She got very frustrated because I kept asking the same things over and over again because my memory was gone. I couldn't remember a several-hour period. But I woke up in the hospital. They don't know why it happened. They actually took my driver's license away for a year, and my wife had to drive me everywhere for a year. Imagine that, husband or wife. You're taking your spouse everywhere. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a pretty needy person. So, like, she had to take me lots of places. Just when I get my license back, I start to drive. Things seem kind of normal again. We're at her parents' house, dropping the kids off for some alone time, and one of my daughter actually finds me passed out again in their living room. And they still don't really know why. I have a heart monitor in me now that kind of monitors my heart in case it happens again. Haven't had any issues in several years. But here's why I tell you all that. Our marriage, this is sound crazy, but our marriage is better because of it. It's weird. Like those times driving to the doctors back and forth, my trust in God, I think, is better because of it. I've been through some things. I mean, I argued with God. I told him how he should be doing things. I refused to talk to him sometimes. But I've got to the point where I've realized that emptiness that I felt has been replaced by something so much better. He didn't come down here and heal me. Like, I didn't wake up one day. I mean, I still have health issues. I'm still trying to figure some things out. But what's happened is in the nearby, in the normal, and in the now, I've found my refill over and over and over and over again. Jesus offers something better. He proved it. So it's like John has submitted the evidence to us of the first sign that Jesus offers something better. And if you believe that, what are you going to do with that information? Because the evidence has been submitted. And John has laid down his case and told us what that first sign is. So would you close your eyes and bow your heads for a moment? Jesus offers something better. He proved it at the wedding of Cana. And I don't know what you came in here carrying, Springboro or Northmont or Classics. I don't know what you carried into the room. But I know that he knows. And could it be that he's letting you run out to give you something better? It could be a better marriage. It could be a better relationship with him. It could be many things. But he knows. And he offers something better. So maybe today you need to start a relationship with Jesus. At our campuses, there'll be people to talk with. Here, there'll be people at the bottom of these stairs that would love to talk with you after the service. Maybe it's the friend you need to talk to. But do it now. Like, don't live in a someday mentality, because I absolutely believe that your refill is nearby, it's normal, and it can start now. So let me pray for us. Father, thank you for the evidence that John lays out. Thank you that this first sign shows us that you offer us something so much better. We look for happiness and fulfillment in so many areas, and we're walking right by what you're trying to show us. So God, help us not to walk by those things any longer. Help us to find the refill in the nearby, in the normal, and in the now. Thank you that because your son died on that cross and rose again, he offers us something better. God, and it's in your son's holy name we pray. Amen. Thank you.